The topic coming today, where this is like a series of shirim on different rabbinic mitzvot which were not given at Sinai because God didn't literally give them, but the other rabbinic enactments. So the mitzvah we're talking about today is the mitzvah of netilat yadayim, meaning washing your hands. Washing your hands, we often wash our hands most prominently before eating a meal. So if you ate a bagel today, you would wash your hands, right? Made a bracha on netilat yadayim. Likewise, there's like some type of commandment in the morning, maybe before davening. There are other iterations, but we'll be focusing primarily on before eating a meal. And in fact, this is very apropos for the time of year we're in, because during the Pesach Seder, we tend to wash our hands several times. Right, not only do we wash our hands before we eat matzah, right, during the section of Raksa, but we also wash our hands beforehand. Before we dip karpas, right? Before we dip the vegetable we use for karpas into salt water, we wash our hands. Right? We don't make a bracha, but it is this weird practice that all of a sudden on Pesach we wash our hands before eating vegetables. Why? Right. So I want to talk about this mitzvah. I think it's very apropos to our time of year, and we'll explore some of the natures of this mitzvah. So first, I'll just mention that the concept of netilat yadayim is something that in rabbinic literature has very strong importance. It has very strong cultural importance. So, for instance, I quoted the Gemara in Sota, had said as follows, Darash Rabbi Azira, Zimnin Amar Le Mishmed Rabbi Ami, okay, Kola Ocha Lechem Lo Netilat Yadayim, Ki'ilu Baal Isha Zona. Anyone who eats bread without first washing their hands is as if he had relations with a prostitute, right? As if he slept with a prostitute. Right, it's like a very bare act without, you know, respect to God in some way. It's like very demeaning. Likewise, there's a Gemara in Chulin talks about this little story. Gutter of Dimi, source number two. Amar Maim Rishonim Hechilu Basar Chazir. There's a story that because someone did not wash their hands before eating bread, they end up eating pig meat. They end up eating pig meat. So the story of the Gemara goes, it's like a store owner used to give kosher meat to like his Jewish customers and non-kosher meat to his non-Jewish customers. And how do you determine who's a Jewish customer, who's not a Jewish customer? He'd see whether or not you wash your hands before eating bread. If you wash your hands, he'd give you kosher meat. If you didn't wash your hands, he'd assume you're not Jewish and he'd give you pig. And a certain individual did not wash his hands. He failed to wash his hands, and the guy gave him pig, and the guy ate nevela, a very unkosher item because he didn't wash his hands. There's like a third story that Gemara in Erevin talks about, where Rabbi Akiva was in prison, and he barely had any water. He like only got like a cup of water a day, or whatever it is, a cup of water for a meal, and he would use that cup of water for washing his hands, and he was very mocked, he was very intentional that he would avoid drinking any water or even eating anything if he didn't have that water to wash his hands with. He was like very stringent on washing his hands. All right, so we see that there's like a very strong movement to wash your hands specifically. We'll get back to the question of why a little bit. Why is this specifically something so stringent? We'll suggest maybe two or three different ideas over the course of this year, but I just want to present that this is already like a topic, even though it's a rabbinic nature, where the rabbis really emphasize how strongly important this mitzvah is. All right, so now we're going to get a little bit more technical, this next part. But the question is, and this is like a really important basic information, why do we wash our hands before we eat bread? Like, why? What's the source for that? What's the purpose? Any ideas, suggestions?
Tumen Tahara.
Okay, so there is like maybe a Tumen Tahara question. But the question is like, why are we caring about Tumen Tahara? Why do I, as a Yisrael, as a regular, you know, non-Kohen, care about eating my bread in Tahara? Any other suggestions? So cleanliness, right? Okay, so we'll get to that two things. Okay, so the source of it is kind of like it is like several steps. The Gemara explains that pretty much there were three different takanot, three different rabbinic ordinances throughout time.
Why bread? Why not a tomato?
Right, we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. But the question is, why wash at all? Why wash before anything? Why make a bracha? Why do we have to wash our hands? So there's really three different levels of in history of like rabbinic ordinances. At first, this is the Gemara in Shabbos, but as follows, that at first, Shlomo HaMelech, right, so Solomon, King Solomon, he instituted some type of decree that you had to wash your hands before the Kohanim ate kachim. So before the Kohanim ate from a korban in the Beit HaMikdash, right? They're allowed to eat the meats, you know, that were offered in the on the altar. So before they ate those meats, they'd have to wash their hands. It's a certain rabbinic ordinance that he established in order to make sure people's weren't tamei. Sometimes it's really about tumah and tahara, some version of like extra purity required in the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, then there was a second level where Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, so Hillel and Shammai, were told in Gemara and Shabbos that there was one time where, you know, usually we paskin like Beit Hillel, right? Typically, Machloket, Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai, these two different schools of rabbinic thought, we paskin like Beit Hillel. But the Gemara said that there are 18 things that we paskin like Beit Shammai, and they're all done in one vote. Right, so typically what would happen was you'd have like all the rabbis come together, you'd have like a big, you know, imagine like Congress, like all comes together, and you have a vote. And whoever was in the majority, that's how you would, you paskin, that's how like, that's how law would be kind of formed.
In times of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, it was still Sanhedrin.
Yeah, exactly. That like was within the Sanhedrin. So one time, the Gemara says, Mishnah says, that one time, usually Beit Hillel was in the majority. That's why usually we pass on like Beit Hillel. But there was this one time, which was they went to the Aliyah, the Hanani ben Chizkiah, they went to like this attic, they had like a smaller ordinance, and maybe it was because of like the Roman decrees, they couldn't get the same usual numbers. So they had a smaller group of people, and they kind of like rushed through, if you will, like 18 different laws that we all passed on like Beit Shammai, that were more machmir for. Right? So they like just rushed through all the 18 things that Beit Shammai had the majority for. So one of these things, what are these things? So the Gemara and Shabbos explicates what these things are. One of them is this thing of washing your hands before you eat truma. Right? So Shlomo HaMelech had decreed they have to wash your hands before Kohen eats. Kachim eats from like the actual korbanot that are offered on the altar, on the Mizbeach. And Beit Shlomo Beit Shammai extended to truma, to the priestly gifts, like the gifts you give over when you have certain grain. And you give over like 10% to the Kohen, or 2% to the Kohen, sorry. So that's what that's what they instituted. Okay, and then the Gemara and Chulin presents it as a third level. Okay, so you had these first level was Kachim, next was Truma, and then they extended not just to those things, but also to Chulin, right? So what we typically eat is Chulin. There's no particular status to it. It's like regular food, right? So they extend that even regular food requires, washing your hands for, right? So Gemara explains why. So this is source number 4. Amar Rav Idi bar Abin, Amar Rav Yitzchak bar Ishan, and Tiyad Dadaim L'chulin mipnei Sarach Truma. The reason you wash your hands for Chulin is because of Sarach Truma. We're worried it's a gzera in order to make people more cautious about Truma itself. Right? So people would get lax about how they would eat Truma. Like, Kohanim wouldn't be so careful. So in order to make sure people were careful about Truma, your rabbis made this ordinance that even with regards to Chulin, even with regular food, whatever you eat, you always have to wash your hands first. Why is it limited specifically to bread? So it's specifically bread because bread is like the main food. It's like a staple food. So I'll just point out, I like an aside, just like an interesting aside, this whole discussion about washing your hand before bread actually comes up within like, it's very important in rabbinic literature, and in fact even comes up with regard to the Christians. So even with in the New Testament, both in Mark and in Matthew, right, within different Gospels of Jesus, you have a following story. I'll just quote, read number. It says source number 5 on the second page. The Pharisees, right, so the, if you will, like the religious Jews, and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus and saw that some of his disciples, like some of Jesus' students, were eating food with hands that were defiled, that is, unwashed, right? So the students of Jesus were not washing their hands before eating bread. So the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat, and the general rule is that Pharisees and all Jews do not eat unless they give their hands a ceremonial washing, holding to the tradition of the elders, right, when they come to the marketplace and not wash. So the Pharisees, so verse number 5, so the Pharisees and teachers of the law ask Jesus, why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of the elders instead of eating their food with defiled hands? Right, so the Pharisees literally ask Jesus, right, I think it's the only example really where like, there's a specific dispute over like a specific law between Jesus and the Jews, and the law they specifically pick is washing your hands before eating bread, where Jesus' disciples will not wash their hands before eating bread, and the Pharisees, the law of, you know, the Jews, the law of the religious Jews was to wash your hands before eating bread. Okay, so perhaps, by the way, this might explain partially why, as like an aside, this might explain partially why the rabbis were so stringent about washing your hands. Why is it so important? Because it partially might have been like a polemic against the Christians. And then a way to really differentiate between us and the Christians is really to show how important it is to wash your hands. So make sure you're marking the difference, so to speak, between Christians and Jews. Okay, but either way, that's all like with regard to like a little bit of background as to where the source for washing your hands comes from. And for regard to Pesach, I'll point out, why do we wash our hands for Pesach with regard to eating the vegetables? So the regular reason is that usually it's only with regard to bread, right? Only a staple food, only a real main meal, that's what you wash your hands for, nothing really else. For fruits and vegetables, you don't really have the same problem, unless, and this is a real exception, unless the vegetables get wet. At which point, when they get wet, then they have the ability to become tameh, and then the gzera extends to vegetables.
Not salad dressing, though.
No, not salad dressing. Yeah, there's like a specific, there are like seven different liquids. It has to be those specific seven liquids. But it's not really clear that we follow this all year round. Some people do suggest we follow this all year round. But there seems to be that there's like a specific like chumrah on Pesach for a lot of opinions. Like something specifically about Pesach that we're more stringent about this than usual throughout the year. So maybe we'll get back to the end a little bit why Pesach is an exception. Like why we're going above and beyond a bit on Pesach. But there seems to be, at least according to some opinions, there's the rule by vegetables all year round, that whenever they're wet, you have to wash your hands first in case you bring tumah to the vegetables. Okay, so that's like a bit of a background for why you wash your hands, like where it comes from a bit. Right. So just to recap a little bit, like the background comes from, we're afraid, really the din is that by truma, really there was like an ordinance that by truma, by like food that the kohanim would eat, that they have to wash their hands first. And in order to promulgate, you know, that decree to make people like more remember, right, not forget to wash your hands before eating truma, we extended that to not just truma, but also to chulin, also to regular food. So all food requires washing your hands first in order to, create a habit, so to speak, of people washing their hands for truma and kachim as well. All right, the question is like, what's the purpose, right? So we talked a little bit of like where it comes from, but what's the purpose? Why do you wash your hands, right? So Mindy suggested maybe two different reasons you can come up with. Right, one, on like a simplistic level, right, why do we wash our hands, right? So if you ask like, like the average, like a secular mother, why did she tell her kids who were outside to wash their hands before they eat their meal, right? It's cleanliness. It's a hygiene question. Your hands get dirty from touching different things. You're on the subway, full of germs there. If your kids played in the dirt or whatever it is, your hands get dirty, so you'll wash your hands before you eat. Right, so there seems to be some type of accepted norm, and in fact, it's like well known that in some ways, like throughout history, Jews were known as like a more cleanly people. Now it's a little bit less so, like not specifically Jews, just because everyone tends to take showers. But like with regard to like history, like it seems to be that Jews like tend to go to the mikvah more often. Especially if the average person didn't really wash their hands or bathe, so like Jews really much more careful and stringent about bathing and being clean. Yeah, but even within, like, the beforehand, even before, like, the Greeks and the Romans, like, before it became really popular to go to bath.
Bathhouses were huge.
Yeah, but even before that.
Most of them were exclusive. Jews weren't even allowed in.
Yeah, okay, I mean, it's, like, within the Dark Ages, there's, like, a certain, like, promulgation of, like, being clean.
It's like a stereotype. It's like a stereotype. Whether it's true.
Yeah, it's like a stereotype. Yeah.
Bathhouses also had their own hygienic issues with.
Yeah. Either way, I mean, sort of doesn't make fuss in theory, but either way, so that's clearly one of the motivations for washing our hands that the Rishonim talk about is because of cleanliness. So, for instance, if you look at source number 6, Tosfot says, "Mitzvah lishmod v'chamim." What's the reason for washing your hands? He says at the end, "Od v'yishlomar takinu mishum nikiut." It's also add that they established this din because of cleanliness. Okay. Likewise, Rashi in source number 7, when he explains,
It says, and also they established because of cleanliness. What was the line before?
It's like Mishum Strach. It's like a little bit unclear. It sounds like, because he's trying to explain the Gemara, because the Gemara gives two different sources, so to speak. One based on this din of like Truma, and it's also because this Pasuk it quotes. So you're trying to explain why there's a need for both things. Okay. So it's. It's actually last week's Parsha Metzora. The Tarsha talks about, I think I quoted it here even actually. But the Gemara talks about, this is source number 4. The Gemara says, Amr Lozer ben Arach, Mikan Samchut Nat Hidayim Natorah, My mashma was about to say, because it says, anything that the zav touches in his hands were not washed. They become tameh. So
there are strict laws regarding the zav.
What?
There are strict laws.
Yeah, exactly. So the limud, like the drasha, so to speak, that the pasuk that they're learning out is that it doesn't make a difference whether you washed your hands or not. If a zav touched you, right, who's a defiled person, if he's a tameh, touches you, your whole body is tameh. It doesn't make a difference whether you wash your hands or not.
Exactly.
So they said that this was like an asmach, this was like a way of learning from the Torah, some type of source, that washing your hands, that not washing your hands, even irrespective of whether the zav touches you, can also give you some type of level of tumah, that now you're chayav, to wash your hands. Okay?
What's srach tumah?
Srach tumah is like a remembrance of truma.
Truma, sorry.
Yeah, no, two different words. Truma and tuma, two different things. Right? Okay, so I forgot like one small part that, of background. The Gemara in Shabbos asks, why do we wash our hands at all? Like, I heard this question. The Gemara says, Mipnei shiyadayim askaniotein, because the hands are busy. They fidget. Right, hands are kind of like busy workers. They kind of go all over the place, right?
Like what you said about there's all the dirt.
The dirt, right? So Rishon trying to figure out like what does it mean the hands are dirty? Why do we care about the hands being busy? So one explanation is about cleanliness, right? So Tosfos explaining that the hands are kind of busy, they're all over the place. Rashi expounds if you look at source number 7. What does that mean that they're fidgety? Skaniotain vinogin bibisaro bimakum tinofet, that they touch and you end up like feeling your body at some point, you end up scratching some part of your body, maybe like a less cleanly part of your body, and you scratch or touch something which is not so clean, if you want like some type of dirt or something. Viganai the churma bikach vinimasla oaklin kishnogea babiadimis to avot. And therefore it's like repulsive to people eating it, right? Especially if you're eating with your hands. It's like a little bit gross, so that having touched something that's gross and then putting your hands there and everyone's kind of sharing the food together, it kind of gets gross. And the food gets gross. It's not a very appealing thing, so it makes more sense ever to wash your hands, clean your hands, and after they're clean, now you can eat properly like a mensch, like a ben Torah. Okay, so that's one reason, right? So cleanliness. However, we should present the second reason, right, which relates to what we discussed earlier, kind of the basis of this, which is really all about Tumah and Tahara, all about purity and impurity, right? So they suggest that the same thing's true here as well, that where they were choshesh, that with the real reason was for Truma, right, that we're choshesh about Tumah, that we're afraid that someone might have touched something Tameh, a Kohen might have defiled himself, by becoming impure through touching something. You might have touched like a dead object, a dead person, that whatever it is, you might have become tummy in some way. So we're afraid now that there's a specific...
washing your hands doesn't... If you become tummy mate, washing until like a dime doesn't take care of that. You need...
Right, exactly. No, it's a good question. It's a good question. So Rashi actually, on source number 7, he quotes this opinion. He actually asked the exact question. He says, if you want to read it,
which number are you on?
This is source number 7. Sorry, I'm speaking a little quickly. So rabbis explain, we're afraid maybe you touched tuma. And as you ask, v'kasha li imke nichu shema naga be'ava tuma v'nimsa. As you ask, your whole body should be a problem. So it's a good question. The Ritva, I didn't quote this on this short sheet, so he suggests that really it's all about we're just afraid of a certain gzera. Really it's all about we want certain scrupulence about Tumantara. So we're not necessarily, it's true that if you actually end up, if a Kohen actually end up touching a dead body, then he... his whole body would be tummy. You'd have to go to the mikvah. It wouldn't be sufficient just to wash your hands. But what we're really afraid of is we just want people to be more...
Care of tummy made, I thought only paraduma takes care
of paraduma plus mikvah, the whole process.
Right.
I'm talking about, I was trying to just summarize to all tumas. If you touch a dead...
Because the next thing I was going to say was, Bizman Azeh, everyone's tummy made. We don't have a paraduma, so, if the practical reasons of doing this are just... Because we've done it forever, not forever.
Right, okay, so we'll get that in a second. It's a good question, great question. I'll get that in a very second. We just finished explaining the Gerritva's answer for what are we worried about with regard to Truma? It's not so much that we're afraid that you might actually have touched a dead body, it's more of a preventative measure. Now that you're more cautious and you have to wash your hands, you're going to be more careful about not touching a dead object, a dead body, before you end up eating truma. It's just like about being more careful about trumantar. You'll remember what you did, be more careful about it. Like, all these extra measures are there to kind of, like, more preventative, if you will. With regard to your question, which is a great question, why do we nowadays, right? So that's all good and well in times of the temple, right, where we ate kachim, we ate, you know, korbanot, we ate truma, right? We ate things which are holy. Nowadays, we don't touch any of that. And not only that, but we are all tameh, right? All of us, in some way or other, are automatically tameh mate, right? In some way, we've all come in contact with a dead body, either directly, either we've been to a cemetery, or if not, there's, like, a way that you can get it from someone else who's been to a cemetery themselves. So because, like, every one of us is somehow in contact with someone in the world, we're all tameh mate in some ways. So why do we care about tameh?
Tameh mate. From a dead body.
Yeah, dead body, yes. So why do we care about tameh nowadays? So the explanation seems to be, the main explanation seems to be, it's all based on this extending this gzeira. There was a rabbinic decree established in a time when it was relevant, and so we keep the same practice alive because it's a promulgated decree, everyone does it, and we, in case the Beit HaMikdash comes back, we want to have this, like, you know, pat down, we want to know for sure what we're doing it right, even if it's not relevant to us in the direct way nowadays. That seems to be, like, one explanation. It's pretty similar, if you will. The Ramban, Nachmanides, suggests that, in a more radical suggestion, that mitzvot that are done in chutzar, so if you perform any mitzvah outside of the land of Israel, Nachmanides suggests that it may be only of rabbinic nature. Yeah. You can't actually fulfill any mitzvah deraita. There's no Torah law that you're not commanded in any Torah laws outside the land of Israel. So Ramban asks, why then should I do any mitzvah? Like, why do I care enough about doing the mitzvot? So one of the suggestions he provides is because if you end up going to Eretz Yisrael, now you're practiced. Now you know what you're doing.
The mitzvahs are rabbinic outside of Israel?
That's one of them. It's one of his more radical approaches.
He also moved to Jerusalem in a time when it wasn't safe to move to Jerusalem.
Yeah, but
yeah, I mean, maybe part of his view. What?
Honor your parents is, that's Durbana.
According to, in outside of Eretz Yisrael, that according to the approach. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a more extreme approach.
For him to say that, it's also like the Abarbanel during the times of the expulsions in Spain was a very heavy proponent against people who were faking their conversion so they wouldn't have to get kicked out of their lands. So he lived during the expulsion in Spain and then subsequently in Portugal and, you know, little by little in the rest of Europe. And he wrote specifically, you should rather die than fake your conversion. And sure. But he lived in a time when that's what everyone in Europe did. Because regimes in Europe, there was constant wars, regimes rose and fall. People, the average Jew thought, okay, so I'll fake it for 20 years, someone else will come into power and they'll be okay with it. And I'll come out.
Right. So either way, it's a more extreme position. I don't really want to talk about it, like, delve it in
too much detail. Which rabbi said that?
Nachmanides, but it's not really. Nobody after Nachmanides really takes him. Nobody passes like that. Nobody follows that as like rabbinic law.
It's almost a reversal because the truth is that the reason that we're not in Israel right now. First of all, as a Baal Tshuva, I never understood when I was first stepping into this thing what the Orthodox Jews were doing. It's Israel, 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 Israel. We're sitting in the United States of America, and I was like, whatever. But I'm going to do my thing anyway. And I made Aliyah. I don't understand. We don't have a temple right now. The reason that we don't have a temple right now, which means that there's a lot of laws that we don't necessarily do to actually make us actually go to Israel right now anyway, because we're honoring the, on a high level, we're honoring the tzaddikim, wherever they actually are. In Israel, they believe that we have a lot of rabbis here and a lot of tzaddikim, and you can be in Israel. We also know that there's a Rabbi Schwartz of the world, and there's people that are on the outside that are tremendous people that are tzaddikim on the outside too. So I don't understand. It seems like a full reversal. As far as when you're talking about like honoring your parents as a straightforward, or Shabbos, or whatever else the case may be, the Ten Commandments just a start. Besides all the categories that come off of it, I don't understand.
So I think that one of the easier ways to understand it. I mean, you can talk about the historical aspect of it being like a certain like motivation, but I think one of the ways to understand it is not so much on the we're focusing a lot about on like, oh, we're living in outside of Israel. How can it be that outside of Israel something is rabbinic nature? I think it's sometimes more useful to think of it more as like a model. To think about not so much about what's the laws like outside of Israel, but really to think about the importance of Israel itself,
Why did he think that?
There is like a I mean, it's based on the Gemara, actually. There is even, like, a statement in the Talmud that seems to suggest that the mitzvot outside of Eretz Yisrael are less significant. I mean, if you look at the Torah as a whole, I think it's my, kind of my point. I think that the Torah as a whole seems to emphasize mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael themselves. So, one, like, there's something significant about living in Israel and forming the mitzvot there.
There are mitzvot.
Something different.
There's a whole category of mitzvot that are only in Israel.
Well, there's a whole category of mitzvot that everyone agrees are only in Israel. But the point is, there's some type of connection about Israel itself that, like, all mitzvot are really supposed to be done in Israel. The Jews are supposed to live in Israel on some level, and we're supposed to all perform mitzvot there. I think that I agree. It's a kind of problematic. It's a more extreme version of thinking about only rabbinic. It's a very bothersome. I agree with you guys. I'm very bothered by it too. But I think the emphasis, in some ways, is the kind of like, I think the emphasis of the statement is not so much about like the way that the mitzvot and chutzarts are, but really to think about what it means about Eretz Yisrael themselves, about the mitzvot there being on kind of like a higher level. And it's not just a deraita, but it's really the way that the mitzvot are supposed to be done. If you want, it's like a larger topic, but like part of it has to do with the fact that in Israel, there's more of like a, Kal Yisrael is defined as a kahal, and like, it's defined as a congregation, as like a people in Eretz Yisrael. When all the Jews are in Eretz Yisrael, there's some type of like unity, some type of family aspect, if you will, in Israel. While in Chutz Laaretz, outside of Israel, we're kind of like all like distinct little communities. We're not like, diaspora is kind of like it's like own little like communities. So part of like Judaism, we really emphasize, right, not just performing mitzvot on an individual level, but also performing it as part of a community. So that's part of the reason why like performing mitzvot in Eretz Yisrael specifically has a kind of like a higher level, where like there you're naturally part of like a larger community. Either way, we're like, this is like taking us afield. I'll just give you an example for why, how you can think of performing a mitzvah which isn't relevant to us now, but you're doing it for the purpose of a future time. In case the Beit HaMikdash comes, we want to have this like habit in place. Okay? So just to wrap up what we said, like with regards to Tfilat Yadayim, right? The Gemara says the reason you have to wash your hands, is because Yadayim Askaniotain, because hands are fidgety, right? Hands are moving around, they're moving around, and they touch something. And the question is, we discussed why. Are we worried about, what are your hands touching that we're worried about? So there are two options. One option is that we're worried that you touch something uncleanly. We're worried that you touch something dirty, and therefore you need to wash your hands to make them clean, right, out of cleanliness. Or two, we're worried you touch something tamei, you touch something which was impure, and you're washing your hands in order to purify yourself before eating something which is holy. Okay, so those are the two main reasons. If you want, like, if you look at the Rambam, also quotes the about Tumah and Tahara, about uncleanliness. But these are the two different reasons. Okay, so what are some of the differences between these two reasons? Kind of like a way of like showing how these two reasons kind of interact with each other. So one difference is a slightly technical difference, you might suggest, which is that with regard to Tumah and Tahara, right, so usually with regard to food, right, there's a certain shear of food you have to eat before like it becomes relevant as like a size of food, right? So usually the type of size is kazayit, right? The size of an olive, right? Under a size of an olive, you don't really have the same obligation. You don't treat it as food. It's too small to be considered like something substantive. Like, it doesn't have like a status of food. But with regard to tumah and tahara, the size is not an olive, but the size of an egg, kebetza. It's a slightly different size. Like, it's based on a Gemara, it's based on Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. There's like a good reason for why it's a little bit different. But this is the way that the Pre-Megadim suggests, the commentary on the Shulchan Aruch suggests, if you think that the major reason for why we wash our hands is because of Tumah and Tahara, right, it's about purity and impurity, then the size, the amount of bread you're going to have to eat before you have to wash your hands is going to be the size of not a kezayit, which is typical, but the size of a beitza, the size of an egg, because that's what we care about, is tumah and tahara. If you think, though, it's about cleanliness, so then it should be like just like any other type of food, in which case the size is not a beitza, but rather is a kezayit. Okay, so one difference might be about what's the minimum size, if you will, of the food you're eating, such that it requires or necessitates the washing of your hands. If it's about tumah and tahara, it'd be the size of an egg. If it's about cleanliness, it'd be the size of a kazayit. Okay, so maybe one way of like explaining the difference, of showing the differences.
Another difference, that's the number 9. If you want to see outside, you can feel free. Another way of explaining the difference might be what happens if you are in the middle of a meal, right? You wash your hands already, and then you end up getting your hands dirty, right? And say you touch something a little bit gross, right? You have a little child or something, and you have to clean them or something, and they were like a little bit dirty. Or let's say even more extreme, let's say you went to the bathroom during the meal, which is a pretty typical occurrence.
Then you do a different washing because this one is different.
Right. So everyone, I don't think anybody thinks you shouldn't wash your hands after. Everyone agrees you should wash your hands after going to the bathroom. The question is, do you have to make a bracha?
Fall asleep in the middle of the night.
Yes, another example. Although
less than 72 minutes, there's no hapsek.
Yeah, although falling asleep might not be a different. Both opinions might agree, might follow the same way.
You still have to wash your hands.
Right, but I'm saying both sides would agree. Both, whether it's about cleanliness, so you might have touched something, or if it's still Antara. I'm not sure differences between the two approaches.
159 breaths, like a horse. No amount of milk.
Mm, right. So the so let's say you can go to the bathroom, right? So then you wash your hands after the bathroom. Do you make a bracha of a tchilat yadayim, just like you did if you're going to keep eating bread? So according to some, you would. Because if it's really about cleanliness, if the whole purpose of washing your hands to begin with is about cleanliness, then you should make a bracha on tchilat yadayim after going to the bathroom if you're going to keep eating bread.
But we don't do that.
We don't typically do that, although there is like a strong opinion within the Acharon, even within like the Poskim, that seems to suggest that maybe we should be doing that. There is if somebody did it, it wouldn't be a weird thing to do, I'll put it that way. There's a lot of reason to do it. Right, so it's a big question. We'll get back to that in a second. But that might be two differences.
But kind it would of still be the one where you go like this, not the one where you go like this. Which one would it be?
It'd be like the one that you go like this, where you go twice on one hand and then twice on the other hand. Yeah. Actually, which brings us exactly to the next point, which is when you wash your hands before we eat bread. Right. So how do we wash our hands? Right. You fill up the cup, and then you in the nutla you fill it up. And then you pour twice on your right hand and then twice on your left hand. Right? So, but some people, Sfardim, Shulchan Aruch Pas says, you do it three times.
Just in case.
Right? So why do you do it three times? What's the difference between three and two?
One, two, three.
Right? So why three versus two? So first of all, why do we do it two? Why does anybody do two?
Because one isn't enough to get everything off.
Because it's a matpok and you want to make sure you get the extra instead of the less. Spas
marubal, kind of. It's a little bit more than that. So why do you do two? So you do it once because you're supposed to clean your hands, right? Your hands are tamei, for instance. You're making them not tamei.
Right.
And then there's this rabbinic ordinance, which is that the hands, there's a special din that your hands, if your hands are tamei, which are like, it's like technically called shniot, then the water itself can also become tamei. If my hands are tamei, touch water, that water now becomes tamei. So I've washed my hands, but the water on my hands are now tamei. So kind of to cleanse that water, so in case that water then touches, my hands again, makes it tamei.
But you dry
and wash
them.
What?
That's why you dry them.
Well, the problem is that the water is now touching your hands again. It's kind of like a...
You mean in the towel?
No, I'm saying you wash your hands. You wash your hands, right? Your hands were tamei, and now the water is tamei on their hands.
Down the drain, or whatever they have.
But whatever, but you still have moisture. You have moisture on your...
The time to get the towel to dry your hands. That water that's on your hand has now made your hands tummy again.
You tried cleaning your hands with the water.
You don't use that water again.
No, but the hand, but your hand is still wet.
Yeah.
You haven't dried it yet. So the wetness, like the moisture on your hand.
Them.
Yeah, but before you dry them, that moisture is tummy.
Right.
And it's going to make your hands tummy.
Right.
So it's like a loop. Like, and then you tried, you were tummy, your hands were tummy. You wash your hands with water, which was fine before, but now, because the water has touched your hands, it is tamei too.
About that water, you throw it in the ground or where?
Yeah, but your hand, but not all the water. Some of the water stays.
Yeah, but then you dry them.
No, right? but in the meantime, some of that water is on your hands.
Yeah, and so
that makes
your hands tamei. It goes back.
Oh,
and makes your hands
like
tamei.
The mouse going in the chametz.
Yeah.
Yeah. The mouse comes in the kitchen.
Right. So that's why you make the That's why you wash your hands again a second time, so that the second water gets rid of the first water and makes your and makes that water.
So when you're washing, I once asked Rabbi Blefus when your dad brought me to YU after I graduated, and I never really understood. So you have two handles, right? Now there's water that's sitting on those handles. I don't know if anybody's really paying attention or not. When they're doing it, they're saying, buh, buh. But the reality is that, do you grab a different handle? Do you make sure that the other handle is...
So it's like a big discussion. It's a big discussion. It's like a big discussion. I think most people, are not so mock bait on it at the end of the day.
I've been aware of it.
But right. But I think, but there are people who are very like careful about it. Like you said, like Chabad has like very careful about it. Like there are certain people
you
who are.
You moved around.
No, me, I'm not Chabad. I'm smart. You. Yeah. No, I'm fine.
It's like a debate within. Like, it's a debate within the. It's a debate within like the.
Chabad, they're like they wash their hands, dry the handle, or use a towel to grab the handle. Wash your hands, use the towel, grab the handle.
Yeah. Okay. So that's in regard to washing your hands twice. Why do some people right? Why?
Yes. The water from the second rinsing, doesn't that become tamei?
No, because it was mitahir the first water.
It's already clean.
Because your hands.
You're definitely saying that the second time would change.
The second water can mitahir the first water. The problem is the first case is that your hands were tamei. So your hands were making the water tamei.
But
it's a little bit complicated. I agree. It's a little bit like
science isn't really there.
If you're on an infinite loop, it doesn't matter how many times you do it.
Especially, it works if you do 1-2 or 1-2-3, 1-2-3, but it doesn't work if you switch.
Well,
if you switch off, then the water, the hands are going to be tamei. Even though halakhically it's a more stringent way of washing, it's... The science...
Like right. The idea is that because you're washing... The idea is because you're washing, like, one hand and another hand right after another, so, like, the hand... Like, that water hasn't made your hand tummy yet. Hasn't remade your hand tummy. So, like, it's just there, and you're getting rid of that water first. Either way, why do we wash our hands? Why do some people do three times? Okay? Why do people three times? So the suggestion is, and this is what Tos vote for, and this is, like, a Balashita, the person who was, like, the... Original opinion is Tosfot. He suggests as follows. This is source number 11. V'sarich lishpoch mayim al yadav gilom pamim parmishona kedei lehavir tit v'davar achotzeis me'al yadav. So the first time you're washing your hands, right, is because to get rid of the dirt on your hands. So the first time you're washing your hands, it's for cleanliness. And then pamishnia l'tar yadav u'pamishnishit l'tar otanamayim. Then the second time then becomes to clean your hands, and the third time becomes to clean the water that's on your hands. Right? So, if you will, one way of thinking of the difference between whether or not you care about cleanliness or you care about tumantara might be about washing your hands two times or three times. The more you think about that you care about cleanliness, the more you're going to necessitate three times, right? Because in case your hands were dirty to begin with, we're going to want you to wash your hands an extra time beforehand, before you first wash your hands.
But it's still saying that the cleanliness side still has to care about the tumah as well.
Yeah, there might be...
It's not really tumah versus cleanliness, it's really tumah versus cleanliness
right.
And
so
tumah.
So I've heard opinions that have said specifically, if you like come out of the bathroom and you're washing your hands with soap and water, now you can't actually wash until you die. You have to like touch the bottom of your shoe or do something to differentiate because now what's the point? If you're washing your hands for cleanliness, like you're saying, then your hands are clean. What do you
right, there are some pain there. I think most people don't pausekin that way.
I've seen it so many times.
Yeah, no, I think some people do. I don't mean to discredit. I think it's only an opinion like that. But I think most people don't pause that way. But I think that's part of a good question. Like that would support this reading. That there really is, that cleanliness is part of like the real question problem here.
Did they use soap in the olden days?
They didn't really have soap back then. They had like some. No, they had like soap is more of like a modern phenomenon. They had like other things, but they didn't really use them so much. The oils, yeah.
And things like that, but nothing.
Which are kind of what soap is from, but it's like more.
Really what we have.
Yeah. Okay, so the truth is, as we kind of pointed out, like there may be both reasons are kind of prevalent. Like both reasons are kind of true. We kind of are washing hands for both. But there are certain opinions which seem to only suggest only one opinion, or only one thing. Or, but yeah, they seem to be a little bit troubling, because they seem to contradict themselves a bit. So, for instance, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the opinion of the Marshal, opinion of the 18th century rabbi in Prague.
What number?
Is this number 12?
18th or
15th? 18th. 18th century rabbi in Prague. The Marshal, who said the following opinion, he thought that if you came back from the bathroom, right, it was what we talked about earlier, if you came back from the bathroom in the middle of the meal, you should not make a bracha. Right? So the question is, why not? If it's about cleanliness, right, Everyone seems, at some point, seems to agree a little bit, like, why shouldn't you be washing your hands?
Interrupting your meal?
What?
Because you're interrupting somehow?
Well, you already went to the bathroom, so you're not really interrupting making another bracha.
Right.
Right? So it seems to be, maybe...
Sure, you can...
What?
Except Asher Yotzar, not until it did I am.
You're making Asher Yotzar either way, but he's not saying not to do it until you have to die. Yeah, exactly. He's saying not to do it until you have to die. But if it's about cleanliness, then you should make it until you have to die. Right? That's the question. As well, there's like a source, and the Gemara seems to maybe imply something else, potentially for why are we washing our hands, which is source number 13. Okay, the Gemara in Brachot says as follows: Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amar of Manita Tana. We learn the following Mishnah: V'hit Kadishtem. The pasuk says, "V'hit Kadishtem v'yu kedushim," that you should become holy, and therefore you guys become holy. Right? What does that mean? Elu Mayim Rishonim. V'hit Kadishtem. You should become holy. These refer to Mayim Rishonim, the water you wash yourself before making a meal. Right, so that water, when you wash your hands and you're dying, that's supposed to in some ways make you holy. Okay, so what maybe we would suggest, maybe this is part of what this din of Yadayim Askani Otain, is that we're not really concerned only about like cleanliness or getting rid of tumma, but it has a more positive gain. That in some ways, washing your hands before you eat is in fact a way of purifying your hands in some positive way, right? Not just about getting rid of the negativity of getting rid of the dirt or getting rid of the tumma, but in some way something positive. A model for that might be, just give you an example, based a lot on the rules of the Beit HaMikdash. So in the Beit HaMikdash, right, there's a general rule, you can't enter the Beit HaMikdash when you're tamei.
Right?
It's a very strict rule. But the Kohanim, every day, when they walked into the Beit HaMikdash, when they first started their Yevodah, first started the practice of Beit HaMikdash, they had to wash their hands and feet, Kiddush Yadayim V'Ragayim, from the Kior, right, from the basin,
yeah.
Right? And that has nothing to do with Tumah Tahara, because they weren't Tameh yet. So why are they washing their hands? Why do the Kohanim, before they begin their day, have to wash their hands? Right? So, you can suggest two different reasons. They're kind of pretty similar for our purposes, but it's just a good model for how you think about why you're washing your hands. One way, maybe, to think about the fact that maybe they're washing their hands in order to give them this extra level of Kedusha, if you will. And then there's like a special level of Kedusha, Daf goes to Garta, Avodah, and Beit HaMikdash. Right? So it's not just that there's like Tuma, and then there's like Tara is like net zero. It's kind of like you're like returning to like a base level, but there are extra levels of Tara. Right? So there's really much more of a spectrum. You can be more than just like Tahor, you can be Tahor for the sake of entering the Beit HaMikdash, or Tahor for the sake of eating kachim, or for our purposes, Tahor for the sake of eating bread, right? For like an extra level of Tahara. And in fact, I didn't quote it here, but there's a whole Mishnah in Chagiga which seems to suggest the type of levels of Tahara. The second way of presenting maybe why Kohanim would wash their hands before they entered Beit HaMikdash is not about extra level of Tahara, but rather is a preparation or better yet, part of a step of the Avodah itself. And in part of the service of the Beit HaMikdash, the first step, the first thing they do is wash their hands. Right? So, if you will, right, sometimes when you go to work, if you have like if you have to like log in, so to speak, like tell them what you log your hours, so to speak. So like that's part of going to work. Like the first thing you do is log your hours in. So the first thing they did was wash their hands. That's part of the Avodah itself. Right? A good way of thinking about this, a good example, is the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. Right? So the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, right, would go to the mikvah 5 times, Mishnah says, and would wash his hands and feet 10 times. Why is he washing his hands and feet 10 times? So clearly he's not like becoming Tahor and Tameh every time, but rather it seems like it's part of the Avodah itself, right? The Avodah, the Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol would have all these extra things he would do, all these like extra, you know, he'd go into the Beit and go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. He do all these things with the blood, all these different steps. We talk about a lot of Yom Kippur. So part of those steps necessitate also washing your hands and feet multiple times. Right? That's part of the steps itself.
How many times do we down on Yom Kippur? If we're down like 5, it's really 10.
Well, for the washing your hands, yeah.
We'll repeat it.
Right. That might be part of the model. It's based on this, actually. Right. It's a good point. Okay, so, and to prove, just point out that Beit HaMikdash is like a rather good model for Nitiyat Yadayim in general, is the fact that there are a lot of dinim we learn from Nitiyat Yadayim from the Beit HaMikdash itself. So for instance, just one, I gave one quick example, but it's really a lot of them. One of the things that we learned about Tiatia Daim, so we there's a discussion about where do we learn that you can take, that we need a kli. How do we know that you need like a, you know, a cup for Tiatia Daim? Why can't I just use the sink? Or why do I need a cup? So one of the sources may be from the Beit HaMikdash, from the Kiyor. Alternatively, the Ritva in source number 16, if you want to look at it outside, he says that one of the sources you have that Netiyat Yadayim requires clean water. You can't have water that looks like murky. It can't be dirty and like murky waters. So that source is from the Beit HaMikdash as well. Right? So the multiple din learned out from the Beit HaMikdash, and it's kind of a model for Netiyat Yadayim, if you will. So I think when it comes to our purposes, without getting to all the technicalities, you can suggest that the reason we wash our hands before eating bread is not solely to only get rid of the negative.
You don't need a clean to wash your hands.
For Netiyat Yadayim?
Wash, but you, isn't it, I can go to the river right now, put my hand in, take it out.
But that's because that's not, when you're going to the river, that's because you're doing Tevilat Yadayim. That's like a special rule that like you're at that point you're putting your hands in like a big body of water, so it's like you're doing tevila. It's as if you did like you went to the mikvah. Like if I put my hands into a mikvah, then that's also good for Netiyat Yadayim. That's because it's even better in some ways. But we're talking about
bring your bread to the river and then you're right there. You mean you bring your bread so that you could be right there.
Well, if you happen to be near a river, yeah. If you happen to be near the mikvah,
you can't. If you're using a sink, you need
one person.
If you're just using a sink, you do need the kli. You do need the cup.
If you have a river in your backyard or whatever, mm-hmm. you happen to be going to a river and you have your bread with you, then you could use it instead of the cup.
Yeah, if you're like on a hike and like you're by a big lake, so you can use. So if you don't have like water to use or a cup,
right.
you can just put your hands inside the lake.
Right.
But that's like a special rule.
Hopefully
but in general, if you
murky.
What?
Hopefully it's not too murky.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Why?
Hopefully the water's clean.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can technically you can't put it. You can't use like a really dirt bad, really really dirty soil.
Yeah, but you can't. But if you wash your hands from the sink, right? Then you have to use a kli. You have to use a cup.
Yeah, right.
You can't not use a cup. Okay, so yeah, that source
there was
comes.
One opinion I heard that when they, in terms of a spigot. That, okay, you turn it on and all that water is just flowing.
Yeah, so there's a question about whether or not you can consider the...
The second when you turn it on, it's not ideal, but the second one when you turn it on, that first little bit of water is the kli that you turn
on. Well, no, that's not a kli, that's the koach.
That's a separate...
There's another requirement, that's like a third requirement for a Tiatia Daim, is that it has to be... you need to have koach gavra. You need to have like the strength or the force of a person. Right, you have to. The person has to actually be actively pouring the water on yourself and not allowing it to naturally flow on yourself. Right, I can't just like have an open sink and just pour my water in. I have to actively do something. So there's a discussion that if I actively just like open the spigot, the second I open it, that's like my cloth. That has nothing to do with the kli. The kli there is like a big discussion.
The kli, the types, or maybe the reservoir.
It's like a whole discussion.
These days, actually, there's hand automated sinks, fountains, etc.
Well, maybe like your koach gavra, maybe from like putting
your
on
hand
there, like
the sensor.
Yeah.
There's a lot of discussions, but I don't want to. It's like a whole another discussion in some ways. My point is that with regard to Netiyat Yadayim, with regard to this purpose of Netiyat Yadayim, the suggestion could be that we're doing something. You're kind of sanctifying. Your hands themselves. So kind of modeled off the Beit HaMikdash. You're specifically purifying your hands in order to prepare to eat. If you want, you can relate this a little bit to the discussion we talked about, Yadayim Askaniotein, right? The problem is that your hands are fidgety. So what are you doing when you wash your hands? What you're doing is that you're setting them aside and preparing them for the meal, right? In some ways, you're talking about, I'm actively thinking about where my hands are. Kind of the message of Yadayim Askaniotein is that our hands tend to like, go everywhere they want, but we're not very careful and cognizant of where our hands are going, what we're doing. And in Tiatia Yadayim, what we're doing is we're actively deciding we are going to pay attention to what our hands are doing, right? Yadayim Askaniyot, we're no longer Askaniyotain. After washing our hands, we're paying attention where our hands are going, right? When I'm eating my meal, I'm going to make sure I don't touch something dirty because I don't want to then go back and eat my food and get it dirty. I care about certain cleanliness, right? But it's a certain like active process whereby I create a certain level of tara intentionally. Right, so this might explain, for instance, that opinion of the Marshal we saw as to why if you go to the bathroom, you shouldn't make a bracha on Tehillat Yadayim afterwards. Because even though your hands got dirty again, right, you went to the bathroom, and you should wash your hands out of just cleanliness, because you started your meal already, and this is within the middle of the meal, your hands have now, you've been carefully thinking about where your hands are going the whole meal. So now you were carefully aware of where your hands were in the bathroom too, so you wash your hands, but there's no need for a bracha, because your hands are no longer defined as a skaniotain. They're no longer just wandering, they're no longer fidgety. You're very careful where your hands are going. And this might also explain why on Pesach we care so much about washing your hands. Why there's such chumras about washing your hands on Pesach. So part of the reason might be because on Pesach, part of like the Pesach Seder, right? A little bit, it's really part of like an avoda of sorts. Really, are you doing some type of like real performance where there's real preparations? There are 15 different steps you're doing, right? There's all these different steps you're doing, kind of reminiscent a little bit of the avoda in the Beit Hamikdash itself, right? Kind of reminiscent to what the Jews would have done if you actually had the Beit Hamikdash and slaughtered on your own, like the Pesach, korban, right? So you're having that sort of process, and when you're doing that process, like that's when it fits in and makes sense to therefore have washing your hands as part of a preparation, as part of the process, a part of a way to make your hands holier. So on a larger sense, right, I think the message of Tehillat Yadayim in large ways is that we tend to have this like attitude sometimes in life where we're not really careful about what we're doing, we're not careful where our hands are going, where our eyes are looking at, you know, what we're thinking about, what we're doing. And Tehillat Yadayim is really a way of like focusing us and making us think about the food we're eating, about what we're doing in an active fashion. And it's specifically relevant maybe on Pesach more than any other time, because there we really care about, you know, what our food is. We really care about the food being kosher, and we really care about being cognizant and thinking about in a very careful way about what we're doing, why we're doing it, and being careful, being pure, being clean, not just only on a basic level of not being dirty, but also actively trying to, you know, renew ourselves, become, you know, reach a certain level of tara, a certain level of purity, for the sake of our chag. So I wish everyone a chag kasher v'sameach, right? A really holy and pure chag where we wash our hands very well.
Here's a question. When you're talking about